Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today we'll discuss the article by Coleman et al. Titled, Low-Dose Radiation Affects Cardiac Physiology, Gene Networks and Molecular Signaling in Cardiomyocytes. This article published online October 2, 2015. Joining me today are Associate Editor Leon DeWint, Lead Author David Gukasian, and content expert Martin Young. Let's get started.
Perhaps just to break the ice, I'm always curious how my colleague scientists come up with brilliant new ideas. So I'd like to start off to ask David, how did you come to the idea of studying this unique topic on the crossroads of radiation, radiotherapy, space traveling, and gene networks?
Thank you, Leon. This is a great question. And I would like to start by saying that I had no idea that this would be a very interesting topic, but in 2011, our center had won a three-year award from NASA Radiation Biology Element of Human Research Program to study the effects of full-body, low-dose, high-energy space-type radiation on early, intermediate, and long-term effects, first on the changes of cardiovascular system function, followed by the studies of underlying molecular mechanisms responsible for those changes. I want just briefly to give an idea of the space radiation environment, which consists of 99% of ionized protons and helium particles, and only 1% are high charge and energy particles like carbon, oxygen, silicon, iron, titanium, gold, which are collectively called HZE particles. In our studies, we decided to use the most abundant ionized particles in the space that are protons. And from HZE, we choose ionized iron 56 particles. So what we examined molecular responses using transcriptome profiling of the left ventricular cardiomyocytes isolated from the mice that were exposed to 0.9 gray, 1 gigaelectrovolt energy proton, and 0.15 gray, which is six times less than a proton in a dose, of the same energy, 1 gigaelectrovolt per nucleon of iron, over 28 days after exposure. So what we find that at 0.9 gray dose of proton, gene expression in cardiomyocytes was not significantly affected over 28 days. At the 0.15 gray dose of iron, cardiomyocytes exhibited a time-dependent and cyclical change in gene expression in the inflammatory, free radical scavenging, and cardiovascular development and function pathways. We found there was a significant transcript overlap between neurodegenerative disease and cardiac muscle disorder-specific pathways, which possibly may support a common underlying molecular mechanisms for radiation-induced neurodegenerative and cardiodegenerative disease and disorders. And this strongly suggests that cardiac protective and regeneration responses in iron-exposed hearts are induced by radiation.
Okay, thanks, Dave. So, Martin, do you have any questions for David?
Yes, thanks, Leon. So I really enjoyed reading this manuscript. I really thought that it was a wonderfully comprehensive study, finding a large number of gene networks as well as an array of signaling pathways that are really important for heart physiology and also stress responses. I was also really quite fascinated by the long-lived duration of some of these observations. So up to a month after the initial radiation exposure, you still see activation of some of these pathways. So I was curious, David, could you speculate on what the mechanisms might be involved in the long-lived nature of these observations?
Let me speculate a little bit about possible mechanisms that are involved in these long-lasting effects. So I want to introduce this phenomenon that's known in the field of the radiobiology, which is called non-targeted effects, and otherwise it's also called radiobiological bystander responses. The scientists are still debating whether these are the biological responses of the body that represent the underlying mechanism of long-lasting effects of short exposures or a single exposures. but I am a strong believer that these are the main mechanisms. So I'll just explain a little bit. What is the radiobiological bystander responses? These are the effects of radiation that are manifested in non-irradiated cells that are far away from the exposed tissue organ. For example, radiation exposure in lungs could lead to ionizing radiation type DNA damage, which are double-strand breaks, in a bone marrow cells or in the intestinal system. Well, how does this happen? When tissue is exposed to an ionizing radiation, there is a damage of the tissue that induces inflammation, which comes with production and release of cytokines, such as TNF-alpha, interleukins, and other cytokines. These cytokines are then released into the bloodstream continuously and reach other organs through bloodstream, where they increase the level of oxidative damage, and then this leads to generation of double-strand breaks. So we think that these processes are then going on a perpetual cycle of damage, inflammation, release of cytokines, damage of the distant tissues, followed by the wave of inflammation that releases again the cytokines, culminating in a more damage of the local and distant tissue.
So David, you also observed differences between targeted radiotherapy, as oncologists would use for oncotherapeutic purposes, right? And low-dose irradiation, which we would expect to happen to astronauts when exposed to deep space explorations. What are the main causes for the differences that you observed? Would it just be the dose, or are there specific in the particles itself?
The first is a difference in a dose, as you mentioned, and the time. For targeted therapy, the average dose is between 30 to 70 gray to a small part of the body delivered over 2 to 3 days in a fractions of the 2 to 3 gray over a month. For space radiation, it is 60 to 100 times less doses. It is something around 0.1 to 0.6 gray, but with the three important differences. For space, it is a protracted over long period of time. It is a full body exposure, and we do not know what type of particle or particles will be traversing the body. In fact, it was estimated that in a deep space environment, every single cell in a body will be traversed by a proton particle every 3 to 4 days, and by a heavy ion particle like carbon, silicon, iron, titanium, etc., every 2 to 3 months. Second, there is a huge difference in the tissue damage caused by X-ray and gamma radiation, even at the very high doses versus particle radiation, even at the very low doses. X-ray and gamma are inducing a single double-strand break in DNA, as well as causing an oxidative damage. This type of damage could be repaired more efficiently by our body's DNA damage repair machinery. In case of particle radiation, due to much higher energy deposited in the tissue and various other factors such as fractionation and delta rays, this is another big topic for a discussion in the radiation biology field. The DNA is damaged in clusters, hence the fidelity of the DNA damage repair is substantially reduced. Therefore, there is an increased chance for development of genetic alterations that may lead to molecular changes and impair the function of cells, tissues, and ultimately the organs. And a third, targeted therapy is planned event with a known dose, target, and type of radiation. Whereas in space, most of the things are unknown, and the type and the frequency of radiation, to say the least, are random.
So I really enjoyed reading this manuscript, and I thought that it was full of little gems. And one little gem that I noticed was that it appears that the irradiation is potentially affecting the circadian rhythms in these animals and the circadian clocks, as noted by changes in genes such as BMAL1 and also target genes like the periods and I believe DBP. Was one of the major genes altered. This is something that NASA is really interested in, because when circadian rhythms, unfortunately, are hazardous to our health in terms of space travel, because we have intrinsic clocks that last about 24 hours, but when we go into space, we disrupt those rhythms. For example, orbiting around the Earth only takes about 90 minutes when you're in the space station. The light dark cycle is only about 90 minutes. And if we colonize other planets, then their light dark cycles are definitely going to be different from our own. And disrupting these rhythms negatively impacts a whole host of biological processes, including it can actually adversely affect the heart and even has been implicated in development of tumors as well. So it really has far-reaching implications. So I wanted to then ask David a question about space travel and whether, based on his results, would it be possible to predict which deep space regions should be avoided on future space travels to limit exposure to these particular particles, and therefore we might even benefit our own circadian rhythms and or cardiovascular function?
To answer Martin's questions, unfortunately, at this time, we do not have, I would like to say, the mapping of the radiation environment in deep space. We have traveled to several destinations. However, it's very hard to map it because all the radiation comes from the sun and it's very random. In fact, at this point, we only have two major tools to limit the exposure. It's a physical and a biological countermeasures. The physical is the shielding that should reduce the exposure as much as possible, and biological is development of mitigating factors, including but not limited to natural substances, biologics, pharmacological drugs that could reduce the radiation effects on the organs and tissues, aiding to the protection afforded by physical shielding.
A quick question I had was regarding the pro-inflammatory phenotype that seemed to occur following the irradiation. And so I was just wondering, would you care to speculate whether you feel that that is reparative? So the immune cells are infiltrating, trying to repair the damaged myocardium and responding to the damage? Or do you think that they're actually contributing towards some of the potential pathology that might be seen when an individual is exposed to this type of irradiation?
Martin, thank you very much. You should have been co-author with me on this paper, because this is exactly what I believe is happening.
You can still add me if you want, you know? Can we do a change?
Okay, we'll So what's happening in case of radiation, that these are going on a sigmoid cyclical pattern. And that is why we are seeing such a long-lasting effect, because when there is a radiation damage, we have the inflammation, and inflammation is a good thing when it's repairing the tissue. However, I believe, and we have done studies and published it, that when the inflammation becomes out of control, it starts inducing more damage by producing the radicals, and those radicals are then starting to induce more damage in the host tissue. And once the host tissue is having additional damage, that's where we stop having the initial effects of radiation, and we're starting to get the effects of the inflammation-induced non-targeted effects, as I mentioned before.
So do you think in the future maybe that anti-inflammatories or even some of these molecules that resolve inflammation could potentially be used as a treatment to prevent any kind of damage following irradiation?
I strongly believe, and we have done the experiments by treating the bone marrow cells with recombinant cytokines and then detecting the double-strand breaks in the cells that never seen radiation. They were seen only low doses of the cytokines. And then we block that by putting the soluble receptors into the media, and the binding of the ligand to the receptor reduced completely the DNA damage. The important thing here is to make sure that these treatments are safe for the space travel.
This brings us to the end of this podcast, where we discussed the wonderful study where David and his team studied the effects of low-dose, full-body, low-energy radiation on heart physiology. This type of radiation is relevant in radiotherapy, and for future deep space traveling by astronauts. It was therefore sponsored by NASA. At a dose of 0.15 gray iron particles, cardiomyocytes demonstrated long-lived changes in gene expression consistent with inflammatory and free radical scavenging gene ontologies. The mechanism behind this long-lasting effect may be related to so-called non-targeted effects, a phenomenon known from radiobiology. Tissues that are exposed to ionizing radiation induce inflammation and production of cytokines. And these then travel through our body and reach other tissues and produce damage in tissues that are far away from the original site of damage, so that a perpetual cycle of radiation, inflammation, DNA damage, and again inflammation in response to the cellular damage will occur. We discussed that space travel could disrupt our circadian rhythms, our natural 24-hour day-night cycle, and this study gives clues which regions of deep space we should avoid to protect our circadian rhythm. And finally, we speculated about the existence of specific radiation-specific diagnostic markers and how anti-inflammatory agents may be used in the future for treatment of radiation-induced tissue damage. I hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast where we took you on a journey to the outer space of heart physiology, and give the word back to Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.